Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and guess what? It's showtime. If you tuned in to yesterday's show, you will get that special meaning. It's a special shout out I'm giving to one of our guests from yesterday, Michelle, who joined us. So while I'm prepared to introduce the guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. That's right. Someone somewhere needs to hear this message. I feel like I'm in church today, but I need you to go out and spread the word. Your neighbor across the street, grandma, grandpa, your spouse, your son, your roommate, someone somewhere is sleeping peacefully. And they don't need to be. They need to be up and watching the Roundtable Talk Show, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're sharing the show, I'll go ahead and introduce my very first guest, who since the first time he's been on the show has become a dear friend. I can actually brag. You ever have a friend that you can brag to your other friends about? This is that friend. I'm like, you know what? I got a friend who's an actual knight. How many people have actually been knighted and then you actually are friends? But Sir Sanju is an entrepreneur, and he understands what level of dedication and support is necessary to help make a business successful. His partner, Salina, an MBA and MHA graduate, is also an integral resource, providing her expertise in healthcare marketing, finance, and client services. We are strongly convinced that in today's business world, it's a valuable asset to understand the global market and how it can present opportunities. I think the opportunity is having Sir Sanju here today. Good morning, Sir Sanju. How are you?
Fantastic. How are you today?
I'm excited. Did you know I brag about you?
That's pretty awesome. I don't brag about myself.
For those who are just now tuning in, please share your experience of becoming a knight.
Sure. Actually, it's crazy. It's almost exactly a year ago we were recognized, or I was recognized, I guess, for my work in the community, especially working with women. And underprivileged communities. And I was knighted under the Order of St. Silenus out of Eastern Europe. So it was a really cool experience, very surreal, very unexpected. But, you know, it's given me a lot of motivation, I guess, to continue what we've been doing and keep us keep our work going a lot stronger and a lot more broader, especially during these past few months where it's been a little crazy for everybody. So, you know, this is a very, very cool experience. I highly recommend it.
I want to be, am I a lady or what is that?
You'd be a dame.
A dame. I want to be a dame. How do I become a dame? How do I do that? No, I'm going off the track for a minute. Transgress because I want to focus on something. I always get to talk to you. We talk about so many stories, your family, how is the family business? The last time you brought on your team and your social media lady was amazing. Your entire team was amazing. But during COVID-19 and the global pandemic, you made it your purpose to help even more entrepreneurs. It wasn't just about the services or the products. You said, ask us for anything. Come to us. We will provide you with assistance. Can we talk a little bit about that, sir?
Definitely. So, I mean, while we're blessed in Canada to have a lot of support from the government, you know, there's obviously been a lot of people, unfortunately, that have been laid off or furloughed or however you want to call it. So what we kind of made it a bit of a mission to do is we've been offering entrepreneurs complimentary services to help them get either new ideas or their existing businesses up and running. So, you know, if they couldn't afford to do their SEO, for example, we would take it on at no cost. If they were looking to start a brand or create a new product, we kind of help them create that brand, help them with the website side of it. And the goal again was that, you know, if we can support in any way that we can, it only helps everyone in the long run, right? And so our whole purpose has always been very much to help new entrepreneurs, new business people either take what they have because they just don't know where to go from there to the next level, or to take people who have ideas and don't know where to start and kind of put them down that path. And a lot of that is done pro bono, again, just with the purpose of being able to help the community and move everyone forward.
Now, if I heard you correctly, you said that if people weren't able to do their SEO, you were willing as a company to do it for them, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. But was there it? Because you and I, we've talked several times, and you and I think are very similar. Like, I come up with all these ideas that I want to help people and entrepreneurs, and I want to make the world a better place. But then there's a part of my team that always comes back and like, Sharifa, okay, the bottom line says that that will be wonderful and that would be nice to do, but we are a for-profit organization. So when you decided to go out and help entrepreneurs pro bono, what was that like for you? And was everyone as excited?
I literally had my accountant didn't sit me down and yell at me. It was kind of fun. the way that we always looked at it is that, you know, we do have clients that, and all our clients have a relationship with us where, you know, they trust us and we trust them completely. So, you know, we're the ones that are able to afford it and do it. We're able to kind of use some of that extra, let's call it margin or whatever it is, and put it back into a fund to help the other side. So from us, it's always been sort of a balancing act. Initially, yes, I did do it completely pro bono in the sense that I didn't have a way to supplement it. And when you started looking at the numbers as a business, it was hurting us as a business. But, you know, I felt damn good. But as a business, it didn't make sense at that point, right? So what we did is we actually created our own fund. So of every sale that we make or every client that we have, we take a percentage and put it back into this fund to help on the books, on paper, literally, show that we're able to supplement and afford the other side of it. But, you know, it talks to my wife all the time about it. I'm like, if it were up to me, this would literally be, we'd do it just for free. I wouldn't charge a penny for anything. Because to me, it's never been about the money or the revenue. It's always been about seeing the success of people and watching them grow. Like, there's nothing more satisfying than seeing someone start from nothing and suddenly, you know, sell their company or get funding and you know, knowing that you're such a big piece of that or such a big part of that. It's cool, right? From all levels.
It is cool, but I also think it's a balancing act.
It is.
Now, I have more questions for you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. Our next guest is Chris Ward. Chris is the leading authority in building your business by building your team. Chris is the founder of the Win the Hour, Win the Day philosophy. She helps entrepreneurs create their win team, what is next team, so you can get your idea to implementation and make your ambitions come alive. After the loss of her husband, Chris returned full-time to her work as a marketing strategist. She was thrilled to see that her business had not only survived her absence, but was thriving. Now, Chris has completely changed the landscape for entrepreneurs by sharing the successful practices that allowed her absence. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm great. And you?
I'm excited. I tell people all the time, a lot of, you know, this is for selfish purposes. I get to learn from the best, from the experts, and I get to ask questions. So I'm always excited and honored to have people such as yourself here with me today.
Well, thank you very much. I'm as excited, and I get to meet people like yourself that are very good at what you do. So it's a win-win for me, for sure.
Yes. I wanted to introduce you next, mainly because of the topic that Sanju was talking about. He's this wonderful, warm guy who, if given the opportunity, given the chance, he would save the world on his own dime. You know, but businesses and entrepreneurs are struggling right now, and they're trying to find that balance. And it seems to me your philosophy is, okay, win the hour. If you win the hour, then you win the day. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was listening to your story I wanted to make sure, Sanju, I was having ideas like, oh, when can I jump in and ask you questions? Because I have ideas for you, actually. That's what I was doing. That's why I was distracted when she called my name, like, oh, I'm paying attention over here. So yeah, we're all about, you know, your business should support your life and not consume it, right? And as you said in my story, what happened was when I was pulled away from my business, my existing marketing clients had no idea of my absence at all. And when my husband passed away, it was a shock to my business community, my clients. They just didn't know anything that was going on. I did not think it was good for business, nor did I want people's sympathy petting on me, constantly asking, you know, I wanted my work to be a distraction or whatever was going on. So when I returned, of course, I had a new respect for the fragility of life. And, you know, I start working with my existing clients under the capacity of productivity and team building and all that stuff. And they started, you know, getting all these ambitions that, you know, not caught up and chokehold by the admin part of their work and started getting those things out that they always had the dream of, because we've all had jobs we hated. So why did we create one where you started? I used to say, I am working hours that laws in the land, people fought and died to protect labor laws. And here I was right. abusing myself to these crazy hours until I created my win team. So yeah, I do think really I have a lot to say and get excited about Sanju and what he's doing on a number of levels. And so win the hour, win the day is really just about, you know, you do want to get ideas from, you know, what I always call ideas to implementation. That's my big thing I show here. Because what happens for so many people is, like, let's say these are, you know, your ideas, your real passions and the things that you could make you more money, that book, that podcast, anything you want to do, maybe just do more blogs, maybe be on more podcasts. And that's, you know, you have these dreams. But then what happens for most entrepreneurs, they get buried. You know, and then you're trying to find them in the week and the day and stuff like that. So if you break it down, you know, that's exactly it. Win the hour, win the day. If you, too often as entrepreneurs, the projects are too global. Like, I'd like to write a book this year, or, you know, I need more help or whatever. But I'm a firm believer of when you create your win team, it is the backbone. It's not just the hiring and onboarding, but the infrastructure, the fallout, the toolkits, the blueprint to your business is what you can sell or what you can show other people how to do and sell info products, all that stuff. So it's really the strategy of having a win team that is the fundamental to any business and your ability then to leverage and help more people in the community like Sanju does.
I love it. I love it. So much information. And we're going to get to the questions, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And our next guest is, who are you going to talk to today? Let me talk to Florence Kraut. Now, Florence Kraut is a native New Yorker raised and educated in New York City. She holds a BA in English and a master's in social work. She worked for 30 years as a clinician, a family therapist, and a CEO of a family service agency before retiring to devote herself to writing and traveling. She has published personal essays and fiction. She currently lives in Rye, New York. Good morning, Florence. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm really terrific. Delighted to be here.
I am delighted to have you. Love your smile. Love your energy.
Thank you. Thank you. I loved yours too.
You are so welcome.
I'm very interested in both guests who spoke early before me, because my life before I retired was very much wrapped up in team building at my agency and also doing all kinds of things for the community, some pro bono and some by the government, you know, funded by the government. But when I started to write fiction, I went back to my roots, which was family. I had a very huge family that I grew up in. I had 27 first cousins, 20 aunts and uncles, and we spent lots of time together. And wow. As I grew, I realized I wanted to write a book about family, especially when I spent all those years as a clinician. And I mm-hmm. saw how families are with us all the time. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I came across a quote that by William Faulkner. He said, the past is never dead. It's not even past. And I think that is truth. And when I went about writing my a book about a family over 100 years, family saga, how to make a life. The question that I asked myself is, how do the actions of one generation impact the ones that come next? Because in my work, that's what I would see. People would come, they would talk about their problems, but as they started talking about their family, you saw that these were repeated problems of their family before them, their grandfather, of their mother. And so that was one of the big themes in the book. And it was the one that goes all the way through. The family comes to the United States from a huge trauma of a pogrom in Lithuania, in Ukraine, rather, where their family is really decimated. They come to the United States, just a mother and a daughter, and make a life. So the book is How to Make a Life Over the Generations. And we follow family members through bouts of mental illness, through gambling, through their own passions, how they get in the way of their relationships, etc.
I think that's beautiful, and I think it's rare, because I remember in high school one of my favorite series, which turned into a movie. I don't know if anyone has seen it, but it was called Flowers in the Attic. And I was a huge Flowers in the Attic fan, and it was this whole series. Right. But it was a rare series in that they started with the kids, the flowers in the attic, and it's this horrible mom and this horrible grandma, and you're like, oh my God, how could they be so horrible? And then in the next book, it shows the life of the mother and the grandmother, and you go, oh, that's how.
All right, exactly. And so this is one book that follows a family, five children of the first gen who were born in the United States, and then their children and a couple of their grandchildren. They reappear as the years go on. So you'll see a character at 16, then you'll see them at 25, then you'll see them again at 30 and 40. And finally, we have a 100-year-old character who's celebrating his birthday with the family. I've been told by people that of all backgrounds that this reminds them of their family. They recognize the characters, they resonate with them, and they really understand them, just as you were saying.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing though, because I see too much mental illness in my family, and I'm like, yeah, I can well, relate.
Yes, people do relate. They said they recognize that when you have somebody with mental illness in your family, lots of things spin around them, and everybody sort of takes care of them and takes care of their children, and this impacts their lives. So
in generations to come.
Yes, generations.
I hope you continue and write another one, because I want to follow this whole family.
Yes, this is something people are telling me. And in fact, it was several people have said, you really ought to make this into a TV series, because yes, the characters are, you know, really interesting and people are interested. So stay tuned. Maybe I'll come back with...
Well, you are welcome to come back.
A TV series. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, I'll come back to you, Florence. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Nicholas Steele. Nicholas broke his neck and back in a bizarre accident and was paralyzed from the neck down. The doctors gave up on him. His wife left him and vowed he would never see his son again. He experienced enormous mental and physical pain and even wanted to end it all. Against all the odds, by using the power of his mind, he recovered. The doctors called him a miracle. He rebuilt his life, traveled the world, set up an online supplement business designed to boost your immune system and keep your bones and joints strong. Plus, recently he set up a unique CBD oil company with unrivaled products that have had incredible results for customers. Good morning, Nicholas. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me to the show.
You are so welcome. Wow. All of that happened to you.
Yeah, that happened to me. And there was more on top of that as well, because before I broke my neck and back and was paralyzed, I was actually diagnosed with an incurable disease that was going to put me into a wheelchair as well. So I had to overcome that one first, which was a big step for me. The doctors told me they were going to operate on me and that I better make a video for my son because I may not survive the operation. So I've had to overcome some bigger challenges in my life so far.
And did you make the video? Did you make the video?
I did, yes. It took me, I cried all the way through it. So it took me about 20 attempts. It started with, if you're watching this, then I'm dead. I mean, you know, So yeah, it was a father trying to pass on advice to his son, and thinking about it now is making me tear up.
It's making me tear up, and I don't even know you or your son, but I've only seen those type of videos on television when someone has to do that. So I just applaud you because you're laughing, you're smiling. And that's one of the reasons I love talking to people is you can see the power of the human spirit, and we can definitely see it in you.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, life's short. We hear it all the time. I had a very successful career, and up until the point where I became ill, I think like most people, we keep striving to improve ourselves and get promoted and set up our own companies, but you don't appreciate how your health, how good it is to have your health. And as soon as you lose that health, when I lost mine, and when I was paralyzed from the neck down, I just said to myself, I worked all the time to try and give my family a great life, but what did we actually do? What did we actually do with that time that we spent together? And I'd give everything to have my health and fitness back, and give away all my finances, money, everything I had. I'd be happy to give it all up. So one thing I say to everybody now is, you know, life is about living. I know we hear it all the time, but until you actually have a major, major injury, and I've had several, you don't realize how precious your health is. So you really need to grab life and enjoy it rather than just keep working yourself to the bone, which is why I was listening to some of the other guests where they were saying about how they can, you know, same thing, how you can make your life work for you and help people to become entrepreneurs, work for yourself. You know, I think that's fantastic, but it all comes down to the person's mindset. And that's what's important. If the person hasn't got the correct mindset and doesn't really want to achieve anything, then that's what we need to change. That's how we need to, especially with children. Children from a young age need to be told that they can achieve anything they want. That's what they need to be told, rather than being told, you can't do that. No, you're not going to achieve that. No, you're not good enough. Because that's what kids hear all the time. And we need to change that from an early age. So we have children growing up with a positive attitude, really with the will to win and strive and be successful, and then give something back to the community, as Sanji was saying. The same thing that we do with the profits that we make from our company. We actually give some of the profits back to a charity, Paws for Ability, which provides service dogs for veterans and disabled children. So I'm always trying to give back as well as bringing products to market which help with people's health, to improve health, because I'm all about boosting the health, the immune system and the brain. I think it's also important that we give back to a community to try and help and move those people forward and help as much as we can.
I think that is powerful. I think that is positive. I want to go back to something that you mentioned when you were talking about what we need to give to the children. Were you raised that way? Were you always raised with that mindset?
Yeah, my father was a self-made man. As he said, you don't get anything in life. You have to work for it. He didn't give me anything. He made me work for every penny. So I used to do a paper round. I used to caddy, wash cars, you know, to make my money, to earn things. He didn't give me a penny. I worked for it. And I think I learned to appreciate it. But I was always told, well done, you've done a great job. Now, what do you want to do next? Move forward. So it was getting praise from my parents, but it was also them telling me at an early age, you can be whatever you want. You can achieve anything you want. We've done that. We've come from nothing. And we've, you know, we're self-made people. But it's praise as well. Children need a lot of praise. They need to be told when they're doing something right, when they're doing well, to really praise them so they have the confidence then to move on to the next step, rather than being shouted at and pushed down and being told they can't achieve anything. Because I see that all the time. You see that out when you're out out in the streets, and you see sometimes parents telling the kids, you know, how bad you are and awful you are, and you think, it's not the right way to go. It's just not the right thing. We need to really encourage children. And it needs to start in the schools, because it doesn't happen at all in the schools. But I think if kids get into a good environment, which is why you see so many kids that get into sports, get into martial arts, get into things where they have fantastic coaches that are encouraging them and praising them, they go on and achieve great things. And I was into sports at an early age. I always wanted to achieve. I always wanted to get better. And I surrounded myself with positive people that had the same mindset, even at an early age, even though I didn't realize I was doing that. I had no idea, but the people I attracted to me, we all wanted to achieve, be successful, move on. Even if we're in the gym lifting weights from one week to the next, we had to, you know, lift heavier weights or on the golf course, improve our golf game. So yeah, it's all about self-improvement. But again, it all comes to mindset.
Yes, mindset. Comment from Jade Elizabeth, who's watching the show. She says, God bless you, Nicholas. I agree with you in reference to what you were saying about the children and giving them that motivation. I'm going to come back to you, Nicholas, but I want to go over to Chris for a minute. You are watching, you are nodding, you are applauding. We're going to go to some of your questions for Sanju shortly, but I would love to hear your thoughts on what Nicholas had to say.
You know, my first instinct, I don't know if it's very, I'm always about business, but I don't know if this is very business oriented, but I do think so very much we take that for granted. Like there's this whole saying of, you know, when you, if you don't have your health, you don't have anything, but until that is in your face, you don't know what that means, right? It's like you have absolutely nothing, right? And that we do get caught up in your next thing and your next thing and try, you know, all these ambitions and stuff like that. So, you know, for me, my personal experience was, wow, things that I thought were a problem years ago, like my definition of what is a problem has forever been changed. And I promised I would never forget that. Like, is this really a problem? It's an inconvenience. Maybe I'm frustrated. Maybe I don't like it, but is this really a problem? So I do think it changes everything of how you do your work, how you are as an entrepreneur, how you run your team, when you redefine what is a problem and how you're going to react to that.
Yes, because you mentioned earlier, Chris, that for your clients, they weren't expecting you to be gone. But personally, were you expected to be gone? Like, was your husband suffering from an illness or he, you know, so you knew?
Well, he had cancer and when he was diagnosed, it happens, it all of a sudden starts dominating your calendar really quickly. My clients didn't know I was gone. They had no idea of my absence. So when it came out that he had passed away, they were like, what happened? Like, was it a car accident? Because they didn't know anything about it. So you quickly get gobbled up in chemo and surgeries and all this other stuff and specialists and boom, 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 boom. And it just grows and it consumes all your time. Plus we made an agreement. He was given a diagnosis that we didn't even tell the family at the time. It was 6 months without treatment, 2 years with treatment. And he did, you know, phenomenal for a really long time, up to 4 years. And then it just kind of really happened at the end. But what happened is we agreed that, listen, if the doctors are wrong, we sat around crying and holding hands for 2 years. If the doctors are right, we sat around the last 2 years crying and holding hands. So on top of that, I planned a trip of a lifetime for him to see cousins he hadn't seen in a really long time in England because we're in Canada. So then there was planning all this other stuff, surprise parties and having fun and a quality of life that's intensified. So, you know, again, I needed a team for that. And my strategy of having a win team where I can get to what is next and really focus on what was truly important. So that, you know, my mind was on what needed to be and I wasn't sitting there with distractions as well. He was my biggest fan and he saw how hard I worked to build that company up. So if he saw me distracted or worried about work, oh, it would have tore him and like sickened him because, you know, there's the whole what's going to happen afterwards. Like there's just so many things to worry about that you don't need your head in that space when you have other stuff going on. So yeah, so he had been diagnosed with cancer and that's sort of how it unfolded.
Yeah, but it also affected you as well. But you're out there, you're doing your thing. You didn't just sit in a hole and disappear like some people do. So I'm proud of you. I applaud you for that. And you come up with wonderful ideas. You have some ideas for Sir Sanju.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, I don't know. I have a podcast, Win the Hour, Win the Day. And we recently had a guest, Sherita. Oh, she just got married. She changed her last name. It was Sherita Herring, but I think it's Sherita Oglesley now. Anyhow, I've known her off and on for years. So one of the things I would think to you as well is I learned a lot from her about her position as every business should have a nonprofit part of it. It's a business tool and that you could be then moving funds back and forth because you, right now you're doing it and you're not getting any credential or kickback on it. Kickback's the wrong word, but you could be getting superior funding for it. And anyways, I can set you up with her because that's a whole thing that even though we're in Canada, she can register. Anyways, it's a whole thing where you get a lot of available funding from the states the way where it's registered and it feeds because she gave me lectures on, you know, you help the business community. You should have been running that through a nonprofit, a charity, and that the book would have paid for itself while you did speaking gigs and blah, blah, blah. So there's a way to move it from one arm to the business to the other. And since you're already doing it, there's so much more you can do with that.
I'd love that. I really appreciate
that.
You haven't done a nonprofit, Sanju?
No, it's one of those things that, oh, I'll get to it. I'll get to it. I'll get to it. I'll get to it. And you just kind of end up doing it anyways, and you never really get to it. So.
Well, and where do you start? Sometimes it's overwhelming to start, but she's the woman to connect with. She's very well versed and experienced in it. So it would take that whole looking at the sky, where do I start thing?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
Today, I ran a nonprofit for 25 years. And
Oh, so you know a little something about this.
it wasn't nonprofit in that we had a lot of different services, some of which made profit, which we were then able to support services that were totally free to the population. And it was the agency grew that way. People love giving money, that's another thing, to successful operations. So the more that you can do for yourself, the more people will help you do for other people. That's what I learned.
Awesome.
And
Thank you.
yeah,
I think that's beautiful. Nicholas, have you ever considered a nonprofit?
I haven't. That's something going forward, maybe with the other guests, maybe I can discuss and look going forward. We've got some ideas at the moment. One thing we did want to set up, my partner, she's American. She actually wanted to, now you'd have to tell me if I'm correct on this. She wanted to actually set up a fund where a scholarship scheme. Is that right? A scholarship where we could set when we could pay for people to go to college, you call it, I think, isn't it? College, university, etc. And that's one thing that she would like to do. So we've discussed that. It's yeah. So maybe if someone can help me work out how we could do that going forward, that would be fantastic. As I said, my aim is to try and. I mean, I wrote this book where I went through my mindset and went through exactly how I recovered from being paralyzed from the neck down after being told I was never going to walk ever again or move. So I went through that in my book, and people can use that in their process in their everyday life. But again, it's with the children. I want to get to kids or teenagers, because I think if we can get them at an early age, we're going to improve people's lives so much that they'll improve their children's lives, and that will hit their children's lives, and so on and so on. And I'll just give you a quick example. When my son came to see me, when I eventually got my son back into my life, when I found him, we were standing in a swimming pool. And he was saying to me, "Dad, I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't do this." And I went, "I never, ever want to hear those words again. If I'd have used those, I would never be here walking with you now. I'd be dead." It's as simple as that. So there's no such thing as you can't. If you've got a problem, you find a solution. And if that means finding somebody else who's got the expertise to give you the answer, that's what you do. But there's no such thing as you can't. And from that day onwards, he never ever used those words again. He always found the solution, and he's now training to be a doctor. So, yeah, I know.
Oh.
So, and that's for me, that's so powerful on how just one conversation with my son, and he never ever used those words again. And we've also, I've got to take my hat off to him, because we were actually living in France at the time where we didn't know anybody. You've got to think, when all this happened, where I had my accident and he was going to school, he had to go to a school where no one spoke English for 8 months.
Oh, wow.
He didn't, no one spoke any English. But within 8 months of, again, when I said to him, "You'll do it, it will come, don't worry, don't panic, you'll get there, just go every day, make friends," because kids can communicate without actually understanding what one another is saying. That's easy. And then 8 months later, he was fluent in French. That was
Oh,
it.
wow. Wow.
Fantastic.
He had a great parent. He's going to be able to pass along that story to his children and for generations to come. I think, like what Florence was saying, it's the generation. But because you took
Exactly.
the time to speak those words into his soul and change his mindset, he's going to change it for everyone to come. I know you were mentioning the scholarships, and I think Florence, you wanted to comment.
That, oh yes, and you can easily set. You have to set up a not-for-profit that is part of sort of a standalone and feed it through donations and or money that you make, that you put in. And then then you have to, I mean, there are rules and regulations about how to run. Clearly, how do you pick the people who get the scholarships? That's a whole other thing. So you're going to need a little staff. It's not free. Not
No.
Profits are not free. That's something that most people don't really understand, but you can certainly do it. Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You can absolutely do it.
Can I ask a question? Kind of unrelated. So all of you on the panel today have written a book, right? Sharifa, if you remember when Krista was on,
yes,
that she had mentioned to me that, you know, I don't give enough time back to my writing. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question to all of you guys is what motivated you or drove you to write or contribute in the form of a book?
I'll be happy to go first if that's okay, Sanju. Well, obviously, I just returned to England after just learning to walk. And obviously, I was getting text messages from my wife telling me it'd be better if I was dead and I should die. And I was getting all this all the time and I was never going to see my son ever again. And I was having that constantly, every day, 10 or 20 messages every day telling me to die. And I was trying to learn to walk. I didn't know where my son was. And I did. I was at a low age where I was actually planning on how to kill myself. That's where I got to. And I actually turned around to myself and said, I can't go on like this. This is terrible. So I'm going to write a book and it's going to be for therapy for me. I'm going to lay out exactly what's happened in my life, everything that I've achieved, every challenge I've faced. And I wrote that book just purely for me as therapy. And I found that when I got to the end of that book and I'd written it, I all the way through, I cried my eyes out, really cried my eyes out. But I got through to the end of the book and all of a sudden it felt like a weight had been lifted, a massive weight. And all of a sudden it was, this is the next chapter of my life. I can move on now because I can't be beaten. She can tell me to die every single day. And I can only just about walk. I was walking like RoboCop and only two of my fingers worked. And I was being fed through a tube in my stomach. I couldn't even eat. So I was being fed through a tube in my stomach for 16 hours a day. Wow. But I got to the end of that book and I just went, right, next chapter of my life, I'm going to rebuild and start again. And it was only because it's a selfish, I did it for me, but then friends and family read it and they said, you've got to release this because it will really help people. And I've got no idea how to market a book. I just put it out there. I've never advertised it, marketed it. I didn't do anything, but people contacted me. And said that it was the most inspirational story that they'd ever read. And another guy contacted me, and a guy called Leo, a German guy, who said that he heard me on a podcast. He read my book. He then left his job, set up a business, and 5 years later, he sold his business and became a millionaire.
I'm going to have to get that book.
Yeah. And I've had other people contact me to tell me, you know, that they've just used the processes that I wrote in my book and they've managed to overcome the challenges they're facing. So for me, I like to give back. I'm a real people person. So again, it's, you know, I've given something out there. I've never marketed it. I don't know anything how to market a book. I'm being honest, no idea. But I just wanted, if I could just help change one person's life for everything that I've had to go through, for me, that's absolutely fantastic. And I've had, you know, I can't tell you how many people have contacted me to say you've changed my life and it's improved and I've got on with it. So for me, that's fantastic. And so Sanju, I mean, I think for you, if you could write a book with all your knowledge and you could, that you would help people with the information that you can give them. And when they contact you to say you've really helped me, it's a massive kick and it just makes you feel so good and so positive that you just want to keep doing more and more and more. And the positive energy I get, I try and put out there. And you can feel it around other people. When I meet other people,
you can feel it around you. I can feel it in what you're saying and what I can feel it in your energy. And you have changed my life just by being here today. I want to allow Florence to answer Sanju's question, please.
Sanju, which question was that?
About writing the book.
Oh, yes. Well, I wrote a book that is fiction. So, because I believe that people can learn from the truth that is fiction. It's not a how-to book, of course. It's a book about a family. And that's why I wrote this book, is because I had really strong feelings about how families impact people in my own life, in my client's life at the agency. And I love to tell stories because I think stories are how people learn. Even when you write a nonfiction book, I mean, it's what your story tells people that makes your book so impactful. So I believe in stories, and I wrote this book, and I have lots of stories on my website because I think that's the way people learn. My website.
And I agree. I mean, to me, even as an agency, we've always said that, you know, it's all about the story. It's how you tell the story.
It is how you tell the story. And so fiction can help people learn, but it also makes them feel. And that's a very big part of what I'm all about. So
yes, it reminds me of one time a friend of mine told me, she said, Sharifa, you have such an interesting life. And I told her, I said, my life is no more interesting than anyone else's. It's just the way I tell it. You know, I love to tell my story.
Right. You are so right. Every person that I meet has a story that is engaging and wonderful if they knew how to tell it or if somebody else told it for them. It's absolutely yeah.
Absolutely. Chris, love your response.
Yeah, well, Sanju, like yourself, I started working with more and more people and I just couldn't keep up with the capacity. And I thought I really wanted to create a movement where your business should support your life, not consume it. And that business should be fun. So I thought a good way of doing that was to get a book in their hand. And a couple of things, Nicholas, I'm sorry, the marketing strategist me will say, look, if you ever want tips on how to market that book, you wrote the book, you're telling me it impacts people, then you need to market it so that you can impact more people. You got the goods, you put the work in, and you're telling me it has a big impact on people, then you need to do that justice and help more people with marketing it. So reach out to me if you ever want tips or want to talk about that. And the same thing with you, Sanju, with all that you're doing, I would tell you definitely you want to be getting that book out. And I would also tell you, reach out to me because I learned so much and did so much with that book. And it took me like a year to write it. And now I will tell you how it's going to take me a month to write the next one. There is a formula that's I just learned has been crafted, and you can crank it out much faster than most people understand. And it's just really sweet. So reach out to me and I'll give you some tips on that as well.
I appreciate it.
We want some tips. We need a tip, something.
Give okay. Something. Okay. I'll give you tips. So when you're writing a book, here's what happens to most people. You let the content drive the book. You're like, okay, I got all this stuff I want to say. Oh my gosh. And I sat down, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going to write 5 pages a day. And some days I was like, you know, I don't think I have 5 pages in me, but then at least I realized with the math, when I worked backwards, well, if I don't do 5 pages today and I need to get this out by June to the editor, tomorrow I have to do 10 pages. So I felt like, I don't know if you ever remember Kermit the Frog going to the interview and Guy smiling. He's like, Mary had a little, I'll never get it, right? I was like, that's how I felt. I was like, this book will never be done. So it really did take me a year to write that book because I had to rewrite it. I was, you know, my messaging was off and a whole bunch of things and whatever. And nice people that cared about me told me this first one, get it out of here. So I did that. But since then, what I've learned through a strategy is what I would tell you is, and I kind of did this before, like an essay in university, but I didn't do it enough. Take your book. Now, first thing you want to know is 3 small books do way better than 1 big book. That's just the way it goes. And what happens on Amazon is then when people come back for the second book, it'll resurge the first. It's just a better formula. People want the sense of completion. They want to digest and complete and say, I read this book. It's 90 pages. I can now put it in play, whatever I'm doing. They don't want a big, thick book. So rather than write 1 big book, write 3 small ones. Then do not let the content drive your writing or the book. You take the book and say, okay, let's say I've got 100 pages. We're going to make them 10 chapters. Each chapter, the beginning of the chapter, we're going to have the 1 page be a quote. The last page is going to be the summary notes, highlights of the thing. So now we only have 8 pages. And then you break that down and you just fill in the blanks instead of starting to your story and writing, which will just take forever. The other thing I would tell you is you think far more effectively when you're speaking of what you know versus sitting down and now starting to write. So if you say, okay, I've broken this down, I've got 8 pages for chapter 1 and here's the topic, and you do audio, then you just pop it into a program of 10 cents a minute and you can have somebody on your WIN team just break it up and put the grammar in play. You don't even have to stop for periods. They will have done that. It'll cost you 10 cents plus maybe $5 an hour for somebody to edit it. And now you're looking at it and now you can tweak your thoughts a little bit and shape it a bit more, which will take you like a half hour, because you type, even a good typer, a good typist is about 55 words a minute, which is not including creating, but we all speak about 150 to 200 words a minute, but we also think better when we're speaking versus when we're writing. So those are some ways that, and then what you do is you can be setting this up and getting it to editing in like 3 or 4 weeks.
Interesting. Huh. Brilliant. Thank you.
That's all I have to say. That was brilliant.
That's great.
Yeah, those are just some of the tips. I've got more.
What needs to happen now is after the show, Chris, just go back to the video, edit out that snippet and add it somewhere. So when people ask you for a few tips, you can just send them right to the video, because that was just perfect. I mean, I got so much information that I know I'm going to have to watch it over and over and over again, because there was so much gold in that couple of minutes. It was beautiful. Florence, you were going to say something?
I was just saying it's wonderful. It doesn't exactly work for fiction, but
no.
Some of it does. Some of it actually.
And then if you've got a good marketing strategy in play on how many podcasts you're going to be on, and you just keep generating that, Nicholas and Sanju, and then also, here's the big part where everybody does wrong. This is why I'm passionate about creating your win team, is if, you know, outsourcing is like, we just have resources that we never had 10 years ago. And you could be really getting your message out and being an influencer and having more impact for, you know, dealing with somebody that's like $5-6 an hour, that's highly trained in this. So you could be having somebody combing social media with a strategy, saying like, right now we're launching our outsourcing playbook for busy entrepreneurs next week. Okay. It's a big thing. It's a Black Friday special. So my social media person right now, she's constantly all day going through the groups, and we call it answer stuffing. So I said, listen, I'm busy today. I got all these interviews. Go into every one of the groups and give me a link to anything that you think I could, like, what's something you're excited about? What are you working on? What are you promoting this month? Anything that I could go in now. And she's given me a list of all the links in different groups or things on social media. And I will go in and answer them, because she's grabbed them all for me. You will also find then too, that when I start answering them, there's very similar responses. So what happens is, for even myself, I'll copy and paste that and put it in a Google Docs. Okay. Sometimes I'll go, oh yeah, that, what's something you can talk about for 20 minutes without any preparation? We see that all the time. Oh, I've got that in my doc, copy and paste, right? So you guys can really do a lot, Nicholas, with your book, with the right strategy in play. And that's just like baby droplets in a big pool of an ocean, right? There's so much more you can do to get that message out and help more people.
I think we just gonna all call you. That's how we solve this problem. That's how I solved that problem. Like, I don't know anything. I'm gonna have a win team. Chris is gonna be at the top of that win team. And that's just how we gonna, are y'all with me, Sanju?
100%.
Yeah. And that win team, I'm not kidding you. I work with people all the time that are hiring people for $20-$30 an hour, and they're not getting the return on investment they want. And they're all like, could we borrow your team and blah, blah, blah. They think I trained them for years and all this amazingness. Or my clients, you know, most of my clients will tell me they get 25 hours back a week within the first month of working with us. And then they're spending way, way, way less on their team than they ever did before. And they're getting way more time off. So it really is a strategy. It's not rocket science. It's really simple, but it's kind of like, think about chocolate chip cookies. We've seen them everywhere. Everyone has a recipe. Grandma's got a recipe. Some people make them without no recipe, but if you take the cookies out of the oven and then add the chocolate chips, it's a whole different cookie. It's all mushy and whatever, right? So it's all about strategy. So creating your win team is not difficult, but it is about strategy.
Sanju, how did you create your win team? Because you have an amazing team,
mine definitely took a while. You know, because we don't offshore our team, everything's kind of done locally. It's like you said, Chris, it's a little bit of a different strategy, right? So for us, it was very much finding the most talented for the best cost, to be real, right? At the end of the day, and making sure that we were hiring people that were not only ambitious, but actually wanted to do what they were doing. And I think that's the problem with a lot of the resources available today, whether it's onshore or offshore, is they're in it for, you know, the first and the 15th. And that's where you kind of start to see the decline, right? And the way we hire, we bring people on, is we don't look at their current skill set. Like, we don't look at a resume. And I brought this up before. I don't think I've seen any of my staff's resume. I think it's irrelevant completely. You know, so what we hire on is, do they have a basic skill set of being able to talk to people, an ambition to learn, and kind of get along with everyone at the end of the day, right? Because we all jump into each other's roles at all times. So that's where we go on. And then the training, you can train. You know, anything can be learned past that point. So, you know, we'll often turn down a brilliant candidate that's, you know, 30 years in the field for someone who's been there for 2 years, but we know we can get them to that place and our clients will love them off, like you've experienced on the last call that we did with everyone. So I agree with you, Chris. It's, you know, having your win team is 100%. I think having it as a offshoot or an extension offshore is a bit of a different process than onshore. But I don't think
it is. Right. I can add to that. I agree with everything you're saying, because we hire what I call CAPS: character, ambition, personality, and success. And those are four things, and it's nothing to do with the resume. So I add to that for sure, 100%. When we talk about offshore too, people who want local teams or want to have it, you know, some of their team locally, there are some limitations for that, because now you're limited by the local geography, and then you have to have enough hours for somebody to come in. If, let's say, you're hiring a video editor and you only need them for 4 hours, well, now you have to at least give them 10, because it's not worth their drive. So now you're watering down the rest of their skill set. But let's say that's really important to you. Like, listen, we're Canadian, I want to hire local. Great, I do that as well. I have what I call in-house team that are local. But when I offshore other responsibilities that are not as demanding or that support the in-house stuff, it allows me to accelerate the business faster and give the in-house team higher and higher wages I would not have been able to do without outsourcing. And the outsourcing, I mean, I've had outsourcers that have been with me like 7 years. So it's got a bad name. They're not physically local. And I'd like to say they're not in my office, but nobody is anymore. So nothing's changed, right?
And that's, I mean, our whole model has also been since day one remote. I've never really had staff. Yeah. And I think it's a waste of time, personally.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny how it all fell into place. But I do agree with you. Things like videographers, photographers, even some website developers, it doesn't make sense to have them in-house. Because there's not enough to do, and there's not enough to motivate them to do things on time.
Yeah.
Right. So if I bring a web developer in house, for example, they're going to take 4 weeks to do a website. If I pay them per website, they'll have it done 48 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So you're right. There's certain, you know, positions or roles that it doesn't make sense to keep them in house unless you really have, you know, that type of a need.
And these are often the things you find yourself doing at 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, I was dealing with this lady who's a very high end accountant that only deals with military businesses, military funded, government funded, former military people businesses, very niche accounting thing. And she had this big function, this big event once a year. And there she was, 2 o'clock in the morning with all her education, trying to make the flyer in Canva. And I'm like, whoa, because you get sidestepped and all of a sudden, right? So yeah, it's I'm really passionate about that. You should be in your zone of genius, because the big thing is, what I tell people all the time is, you're damaging overhead, delayed income, or diminished opportunity is really what cripples the business. And damaging overhead, people think, oh, I'm not paying that much or whatever. You're the damaging overhead, because the money you could have brought in, now you're spending all that money doing a Canva flyer. You're the damaging overhead.
100%. It's penny wise, pound foolish, right?
And
So I see it so often. But what would be cool, maybe offline, I'd love to pick your brain, is, you know, the problem I've always had, which I've gotten better at now, is I am the brand. So if I want to go vacation and, you know, wherever, it's like, no, I want to speak to Sanju, right? And so I've gotten better at pushing that off. But, you know, I'd love to pick your brain on how you did that and managed to disappear for, you know, without people actually noticing.
Just for me, but for all my clients. All my clients come to me and listen, in this modern virtual world, you have to be the brand. Everybody's the brand, right? There's just no way. Tony Robbins is the brand. Now, you back when we were flying, you'd see all of a sudden the video, it'd be the president of the airline saying, we're so glad you chose us, because they want them to be the brand. They want to bring the relationship into more intimacy. So if you're doing your work correctly, you are the brand. But that does not mean that you should not be planning your whole work within your vacations and living the life that you were promised as an entrepreneur.
Oh, that is wonderful, powerful words to end this show. Now, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Florence.
Oh, great. So my book is How to Make a Life. You can buy it in any bookstore, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It is available on Kindle and will soon be available on Audible, on an audiobook. My website is my name, Florence Reese Kraut. And you can read stories, essays, blogs, travels on my website and sign up for my newsletter. I'd love it to hear from people who read the book and like it. And I do a lot of book clubs. If you have a book club, I'd love to have a conversation with your readers, just as we are here. How to Make a Life, Florence Reese Kraut. Thank you.
Yes, How to Make a Life. Nicholas, what do you have for us?
I would say to people, it's your mindset. Your mindset needs to change. You need to become really positive. You need to stay away from all the negativity. Stop watching news. Stop watching really crappy reality shows. Start laughing. Start watching comedies. Change your brain. Everything is about your brain. Everything in today's life is doom and gloom. And your subconscious takes that away, so it stops you from overcoming challenges. So you need to understand how you can change your mindset. So what I would suggest is to people, if you want to read my book, it's called The Unbreakable Spirit of the Unbreakable Man by Maxine Steele. That was my mother who had to write it because obviously my fingers didn't work. So she wrote it. So it's The Unbreakable Spirit of the Unbreakable Man by Maxine Steele. That's on Amazon. I personally launched or designed some products for me to help boost your immune system and your brain health. And that you can find those at steelspirit.com. And finally, we've just launched a unique range of CBD oils made up from five different strains of cannabis plants. They're unique. No one else in the world does this. They're completely raw, so it's like squeezing the raw plants into the bottle. So if you want to go to melspremium.com, that's where you find those products. And it's all about, everything I do is about improving your body's health, boosting your immune system, and taking care of your brain's health. Everything about the immune system and your brain, changing your mindset and actually improving and improving your life and overcoming any challenges. So last thing I would say is anything is possible. Don't let anyone tell you that it isn't. You can achieve anything you want.
That is powerful. Anything is possible. Yes, I definitely agree, Nicholas. Chris, what do you have for us?
Yeah, just, you know what, if you thought anything I said today was worth its salt or of any interest to you, check out www.freegiftfromchris.com. We've got a bunch of things that we're still charging for, but we're giving them away to your audience, to you guys for joining us on this magical hour. And Sharif is right. Be advocate, spread the word of her wonderful show. So just check out www.comingsoonfromchris.com. And remember, you know what? Business should be fun and life should be more fun.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Sanju, what do you think of today's show? You've been back a couple of times. How are you feeling today?
I absolutely love today's guest. I think it's, you know, I look forward to buying all your books and then reading them. Like, they all look absolutely amazing. So thank you for letting me be part of the conversation today. I would say that, you know, I changed up my artwork this time because I think what I wanted to encourage this time was the art of a good conversation and a fair conversation. And no matter where and how or whatever our backgrounds are, our beliefs are in life, there's no way why we can't bring all of our genius together and promote love at the end of the day.
I think that is powerful. And I love the artwork. I think it's so beautiful. And just the half and half, I like it. Different faces bring it, but coming together. I want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show doesn't mean you are not important and that we don't still need your support, because we do. Go ahead and share the show with your friends, with your network, but please go ahead and support our guests. Visit their websites. Their link is in the Facebook post above. And when you're visiting their website, follow them on social media. And when you send that first message, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to my New Year, New You 2-day teleconference on December 29th and 30th, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Bye-bye.